big word for today, crypto. And you talk about a hard fork. And so you see the same thing happening in banking. So can you explain what this hard fork is and what's happening in banking?
Yeah, that was more to create an analogy. In the crypto world, and even there's gonna be people watching this who know 10 times more about it than I do, which is mathematically incorrect because I kind of know zero. So it could be 100 times more, it's still zero. There's a concept in the crypto world called hard fork, which is when the protocols change and transactions and protocols that were invalid before the fork mm-hmm. now become valid. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I use that as an analogy because I think that as an industry, we are coming up to the hard fork. And the hard fork is the strategies that we've had in banking, and not just credit unions, but banking in general, for the past 40, 50 years, which is let's offer a set of accounts and push it out there right. and get customers to use it, is hitting the fork in the road. And that fork in the road is either going towards embedded fintech or mm-hmm. embedded finance. Mm-hmm. And I think the reality for a lot of credit unions is that embedded finance is not going to be the preferred path because you probably need a national charter for that or a broad charter mm-hmm. for it. Mm-hmm. Or you probably will be a credit union that does not have a geographic focus because that will limit you.
Yeah.
Which means the other fork is going towards the embedded fintech strategy of kind of really rethinking the scope of products and services yeah. that you provide yeah. to a particular segment or various segments of the market mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that you're not overly limited. But that was kind of the idea of the fork. And okay. the other thing was, as you saw the picture, I actually have a picture of a hard fork in the road.
That's a good one, yeah.
And I made the point that you don't have to choose the left path or the right path. You can continue to go forward with the strategy you have. But if you do that, you're going to hit the fork in the
literally,
road.
Literally, yes.
And that joke bombed, guys. So you're never going to see that at another Ron Shevlin presentation.
One time only, ladies and gentlemen. The other thing in there, before I get to the last point, was the amount of funds leaving a financial institution and going into a crypto account. That floored me because you consolidate. It's more than Amazon, and you named a couple of other organizations combined.
Yes, this was data from Fiserv. They okay. had done an analysis, and in all fairness, this was before the major crash yeah. of the crypto price. Yeah. But basically, they looked at January and February of this year, looked at the outflows of funds from their banks, and I would assume credit unions too, and found that there more money was moved out of accounts. It went to crypto platforms like Coinbase and Kraken and places like mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm. then went to Amazon, Target, and Walmart combined.
That, I fell out of my chair when you said that.
Combined.
That's massive.
That's not my data. That's Fiserv.
That's massive.
So they better be right.
Exactly. Well, that's incentive for a credit union to go, maybe we should check this out if they're not checking it out already.
Yeah, my point is, you know, and the many credit union execs now, Mike, are going to look at this crypto crash and go, see, we were right to stay out of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Go, no. Your members are doing this stuff regardless of yeah. whether or not you provide it. And if you are truly committed to providing advice and guidance in helping your members manage their mm-hmm, financial mm-hmm. lives, you either need to be in as many of these product and services areas that they are, or have partnerships that provide
yep.
them.
Yeah.
You need to be the platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all about, you know, you can get your revenue share
sure.
from it, from
sure.
the cut. But it's that's why I say I think there's this hard fork in the road mm-hmm. From a strategy perspective of really rethinking the business.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. All right, last topic here, and I'll let you get going here. You wrote an article about the neobank era ending. That one just came out.
Yes,
was
right.
on the Gonzo Banker blog, or is that a Forbes
the
thing?
The FinTech Snark Tank.
Okay.
On Forbes.
On Forbes. There you go. We'll put a link to it in the show notes about
that.
So tell us about that, because I find this, I thought we were on the uptake, but it sounds like we're on the downside here.
Well, it depends who you talk to.
Okay.
I'm going to give you my two cents on this. Look, I'm not saying that neobanks are going out of business. What I'm arguing is that the level of investment that's going into new neobanks is going to fall off very seriously in the U.S.
Okay.
There were some people like Brett King and a couple others who argued Yeah, Ron, you're right, but strictly from a U.S. perspective. You look at Latin America and other areas, it's definitely not the case. However, it's different. You know, it's a they may follow the same path as the U.S. But from a U.S. perspective, here's why I think this is falling off the cliff. Number one, there's the economics of the neobank today, especially a neobank that relies on interchange as a revenue source.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Too unstable, too many trends in this in the industry that are going against interchange as being your sole revenue source. Number one, if you're betting that interchange rates and fees are going are going to go up, you're absolutely crazy. Not to mention how many credit unions now and more, and especially banks, are reaching that $10 billion asset thanks to what's been happening the past couple years.
Yeah.
And so the interchange rates are going to decline for all of those institutions. But more importantly, and I kind of alluded to this before, look at consumers' payment activities. It's shifting to mobile, merchants' mobile apps. It's shifting to the mega fintechs like PayPal and Square and others. You look at that payment activity and it is dispersing to a wide range of sources and providers. And so the neobanks in particular, who are so heavily reliant on the interchange, and who, by the way, have to share that revenue with their sponsor banks or credit unions, it's just not a feasible strategy. Number two, so what would they, what could and should they do? Well, move into lending would be the most obvious choice. Now, number one, easier said than done. You need a license and charter to do that, and their existing sponsor banks may not actually be very strong on the lending side. More importantly, and I think the real killer, is that if you look at the demographics of most of the large neobanks customer base, these are low to middle income consumers who aren't the best, sorry, but they're just not the best lending prospects.
I hear you.
And I think the you look at the large fintechs, in particular Square, PayPal, have been growing the percentage of their customers who consider them now their primary payment provider.
Gosh.
It's huge. So I've estimated that the 10 largest neobanks in the U.S. have about 33 million accounts opened. And I don't say 33 million customers because any one customer might have multiple accounts,
so
it's hard to make that. So if they have 33 million or so accounts, about half of which the customer considers the neobank their primary provider. PayPal and Square Cash App, just the two of them, 15 million customers consider them to be their primary app. And between the two of them, they have somewhere in the order of 250 million accounts opened. And so their run-up to becoming primary. So Jason Mikula, and I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, Mikula, I think it is. He's out of the Netherlands now, used to work at Goldman Sachs, writes one of the best fintech newsletters out there called Fintech Biz, Weekly Biz. Jason Mikula.
Look him up.
Google. We'll look him up. Did an analysis and reported that Varo Bank's cost of customer acquisition was $45. Now, most people will look at that and go, oh, well, compared to the banks, which is $150 to $300, that's a great deal. Look at the economics. Stop. One out of every two neobank customers considers the that fintech to be their primary, which means the real cost of good customer acquisition to them is $90, not $45, and you're getting a customer who's not a good lending prospect. The whole customer acquisition cost thing, Mike, has always been an amazing thing to me because everyone brags about how the neobanks and fintechs have a lower cost of customer acquisition. But it's like, but if it costs you $5 to get a bad customer, and it costs me $50 to get a good customer, meaning lifetime value,
right.
I'm going to spend that $50 every day to get a customer, and you can go spend your $5 to get the lousy customers. Okay, and no one's going to like the fact that I'm calling a customer lousy, but let's call it as
some
it
of them,
is.
Some of them
so
are.
So the economics of the neobanks, and every, I tell you, I've had a lot of arguments with people over the past couple of years about the you know, the economics of the neobank model and the reliance on interchange. And the argument's always been, yeah, but they'll expand their services at some point. And so my point in the article was like, aren't we at that point? We're at some point, you know?
Yeah.
And they're not seem to be moving in that direction. So I think the smart VCs are looking at the neobank market and going, yeah, Chime, look, Chime's raised too much money to go under. There's too much big money in that to let them ever go under.
Right.
But I just don't see the VCs ponying up billions and billions of dollars more over the next 5 to 10 mm-hmm. years to fund new neobanks with questionable business models.
So, and last question, I promise, opportunity for credit unions? Is this an opportunity for credit unions? Is this good news for credit unions? This era that might be ending?
It doesn't affect what we already talked about.
Right.
You know, it doesn't impact them. It shifts the competitive nature. My message to the credit unions would be is the negative impact that a Chime or a Varo or any of the current, you know, some of these others have had on your institution is starting to wane.
Right, right.
But you got a new set of competitors and they're big and they got a lot of money and their names are Square, PayPal, Apple, and Google and not Amazon as much. They don't seem to be really wanting to get into it, but man, Apple is, you know, quietly building, and maybe not so quietly.
Yeah.
And Google has stumbled over the past couple years, but I wouldn't count them out.
Yeah.
And Square in particular is a machine, man. Mm-hmm. That thing is cranking.
No doubt. All right, Ron, I'm going to let you get going. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it as always. Well done and great keynote. And this stuff is fascinating. I don't get you in person every now and then, I'm going to take a little extra time. So
no,
I appreciate your
worries.
Time.
I got nowhere to go.
Good. Yeah, you do.
I'm done.
You're here. You got to go teach a class here on Duke, right?
No.
Well, enjoy the rest of your time. Appreciate it. Well done. There he is, everybody. Ron Shevlin. Go find him at Cornerstone Advisors and your Forbes, the
Snark Tank.
You got it. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.